What's on Product People this week? Well, we have part two of our interview with John Saddington. This interview literally sent warning bells blaring through the 8-bit office. You won't want to miss it. If you have a web development team or a product team, you probably want to know where you're wasting time and how you can be more efficient. This is exactly what Sprintly does. It helps surface the things that slow down development so you can focus on shipping faster. You and your team can try Sprintly for free by going to www.sprint.ly. You won't want to miss the shoutouts we have at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. Now let's get back to our chat with John Saddington.
And I just think far too many entrepreneurs do way too much due diligence instead of just pressing start is what we say here at 8-Bit. Just press start. Just press start. Jump in. No, don't read the manual. Go die a couple times on the first level, and then you'll learn.
Mm-hmm. You know the thought in my head right now, and I think this would be a good question, is I'm thinking, you know, right now John has this office and this team and this freedom. You know, it sounds like there's some freedom in that space. But there's a lot of our listeners that are probably thinking, you know, I work full time and I get home from work and I'm just exhausted. And the idea of doing something on their side project, like often side projects become a slog that we just do every single night for years and never kind of do anything. So what are some things that people that have side projects can do to do that, to like set some goals? And how did you do that in the past when you didn't have maybe as much time as you do now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so this is not so much about discipline, because I'm not a very disciplined person, but I do set boundaries, and I set boundaries not just for myself personally, but I also set boundaries for our company, the amount of hours that we work and invest in the company, and also boundaries for my family, mm-hmm. and for my time with my children. And what's nice about boundaries is they are hard, but there's a lot of flexibility within them. And so for my side projects, all I would do is I would create a boundary of time during the week and during each day to say, this is the amount of time that I'm going to work on this side project. And typically it was, you know, almost always in the evenings. And say for 2 hours a day for the next 10, 15 days, I'll build the MVP. And if I'm that in love with the idea, which I usually am, mm-hmm. then filling in those 2 to 3 hours a night for the next, 15 business days will not be hard work at all. And that's what I'm going to do. And then for me, I have a start date and I have an end date. And if I meet my deadline for the product for those 15 days, fantastic. Then I think, okay, what's the next step? Instead of just saying, well, I'm just going to have a side project, kind of fiddle, fuddle-duddle with it every night for a couple hours and see what happens, and maybe, it might come out. But without deadlines, it's like you just never know if you're creating progress. And it's very difficult to measure momentum.
Yeah,
and for me and for our team here, we have quarterly releases. That's very important, because there's a deadline for your next major push, for your product. Your mm-hmm. customers expect it, so there's accountability there. But you also then can celebrate. I think that's one of the big deals for us is, we have kind of a big family day coming up, and we're all going to have all the families and the wives and the children go out to the zoo together, and we're just going to celebrate like the first quarter.
Yeah,
and without those deadlines, you don't know if you've succeeded in doing anything. Mm-hmm. It can be very difficult to feel like if you made any momentum. But to say, hey, release the next push for Q1, fantastic, big jump in sales, let's go have a party. And it's just everyone feels great about that, and then it mm-hmm. energizes us enough for another 3 months of work. But yeah. That happens at the corporate level, but also at a personal level. When I finish my sprint, I use a little bit of Agile software methodology. Well, I finish that sprint, I feel really freaking good, and I'm going to go grab like a six pack and I'm going to down it myself. It's like, or whatever it is. Or I'm going to grab a cigar and I'm going to go into the balcony and just hang.
Yeah.
And that just very, very, very simple reward system can go a long ways.
Yeah, and I guess it's better than the flip side, which is you just keep slogging with no deadline. but you never get to celebrate anything. You don't accomplish as much. And you also don't, you just keep feeling like all you're doing is slogging. There's no kind of end to it.
Yeah, it's very difficult to measure progress. And you know what the thing is, you know, and you've probably met and talked, you know, through this naming experience for yourself, but some of the greatest innovations are where you're able to relieve yourself of a previous obligation. It's like there's this very, you know, when you can get to a point of decision, as every pivot is made at a point of decision. You know, I know that's Eric Ries' big thing.
Yeah.
But it really is true. It's like unless you have a deadline, it's very difficult to come up with a justification for a pivot. But if the deadline's looming in 10 days and you're 100 points back and three sprints behind, it's like there's no question. You are coming up to a point, a fork in the road for your company, for your product, and you have to make a decision. Well, you know, F it. We are so far behind. We're never going to make this. We have to internally pivot. Mm-hmm. And that helps you create that reason to make a change. Otherwise, it's just like, yeah, side project, no big deal. I didn't get to it, but, you know, no one's looking over my shoulder. But without those personal deadlines, like, you can be slaving away at something and never launch.
Yeah.
I think, like, setting the deadlines, like you just mentioned, and, like, you know, setting up metrics for when you should pivot and that sort of thing is, the big thing is that's all objective evidence for you doing so, whereas, like, Justin, earlier you mentioned something about like having an emotional connection, I think, to your side projects, and like it can be pretty hard, I think, to evaluate like do I change this? What should I do? If you're basing your decision off like if you're not basing it off of like, you know, objective data like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You are spot on, and that could be preached to every entrepreneur who's listening. Is there's no getting around it. You are emotionally tied to your startup and your product and your side project. It just, you are one with that thing. You know, it's your baby, and so you have to create objective ways of categorizing your product and telling yourself that it's ugly. Like, otherwise, you're never going to be able to because you're just so emotionally involved. But when you say, oh, I'm so in love with this product or this idea, I spent the last 8 months in it, and you're coming up on that deadline, you're forced to just look at your baby in the face and say, damn, you're ugly. You know, and just say, man, I am so sorry. I have not you are not done, and I have to make a decision. You know.
Yeah.
I think that's spot on.
Interesting. Now, why don't we talk a little bit about. Let's talk about, Kyle, did you have anything else you wanted to, I know sometimes you've got things stewing from stuff we've already talked about.
That's how we work. Justin, like, keeps asking these questions, and I just sit here and I think of, like, it takes me, like, 10 minutes to think of a question. I don't really have anything, hanging right now, so we can kind of move on. I'm sure we'll come up with more as we go.
Perfect. Well, John, why don't we talk about Pressgram? What is Pressgram?
Yeah, Pressgram, very simply, it's an iOS application that helps the user take filtered photos and then publish them directly to your WordPress blog. That's its base functional kind of description. But I think there's a much bigger philosophical thing with Pressgram, and it's this idea of having much more creative control over your content. You've been around, you guys have been around for a while, so you probably remember, and it wasn't even that far along, but it seems like an eternity, you know, the Instagram issue with kind of licensing rights, you know, for the users and all that stuff, and, you know, now Instagram is part of Facebook, there's even more governance and oversight and stuff. But I'm just philosophically against, that governance, that control, those licensing. I think, you know, true creative publishing and true control of publishing is not just the inception or the actual, you know, creation of the piece of artwork or the capturing the image. It's also the right to publish where you want without restriction. And so, loving WordPress and kind of the open source philosophy and mindset, I thought, well, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to take pictures of my kids, my cat, my dog, my daughters, whoever,
Yeah.
And then post it to my blog, not post it to Instagram.com/John Saddington.
Yeah.
I want to retain those page views. I want to retain that continuity of messaging and brand and whatever. And I think many people do too. But it started at just filling my own need, you know, as they say, scratching your own itch.
Yeah.
In October, I left Instagram. I had left Facebook earlier and just said, but man, I really like filtered photos. Like, I'm a terrible, you know, iPhone, you know, photographer, and the filters make it look like I'm 1,000 times better. So I like filters, but I don't want to use Instagram.
Yeah.
So I thought I'm going to set out to create a small application that'll do that.
And Pressgram, so you kind of built the MVP for Pressgram, is that right?
Well, I started concepting anything from just sketches to full kind of high-def composites. And then I started developing in February. And then I got to a point, you know, where I was like, I'm 6 months in from this, and now this is a significant side project for me. And from what I had gathered, I had estimated very conservatively from about 1,100 to 1,400 hours to complete it. You know, I've built so many products historically, so I have a very good intuitive feel for the time. But I built it all out by sprints and hours. And I was like, man, if I keep doing this, you know, a few hours a night and then kind of binge on the weekend, it's going to take me another 9-10 months to finish this thing, which means that my side project will have ballooned to about a year and a half, 18 months, maybe at the very least. I'm like, there's no way that I want to do that.
Yeah.
So then the only way I'm going to be able to accelerate that is if I can either raise some capital for it or, you know, leave my current company or something.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do those. I didn't want to raise any capital because it just wasn't. I didn't have enough conviction to actually go in front of my previous backers and be like, hey, I think I want to build this. I could not convince anyone to back it. So I just said, well, I'm going to try Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And see if it works. I have backed many projects. I think I've backed over 100 projects myself. So I'm a huge fan of crowdfunding, but I never considered doing it for myself. So I said, well, I like experimenting, so let's see what happens. And so far we've got, I guess we're in about 12, 13 days in, almost halfway there in terms of time. And then I think we're about 35,000 out of 50,000. So I think we're going to be able to do it.
Yeah. And what, like, maybe talk about like at the end result, like people that back this project, what do they get?
Well, they get the finished application much sooner than later, which is kind of the biggest win for everyone involved, including myself. But there's some basic rewards, you know, from anything from stickers to cool swag. We got a shirt that I want to release and some other cool kind of printed material. Someone did donate the 10,000, which was the largest one, which they get to actually name one of the filters, whatever they want.
Oh, cool.
So that was cool.
Wow. We are
forever immortalized in the application. So that was really cool.
This is crazy.
So there's a bunch of different rewards, but otherwise I really feel like the biggest reward is knowing that you were a part of something revolutionary.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've really kind of come around to. I was very coy in the beginning because I thought they would reject my project because I was fairly vitriolic against Facebook and Instagram, and no one wants to, you know, like willingly support a fire starter when a fire starter isn't necessary.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, well, I really toned down the language for my project when I submitted it. But then once I submitted it, I was like, oh well, like now that you said okay to it, now I'm going to say, hey, Facebook's my enemy, and if you don't like Facebook and you don't like having some kind of big brother over your shoulder when you take images on Instagram, then you should find an alternative. And I think I have an alternative for you.
Yeah.
So now I'm no longer coy. I'm just like, yeah, this is what it is.
Yeah. That's your enemy. Are you going to release it as a paid product at the end? Like it's going to be a paid app in the app store?
Nope. It's going to be entirely free.
Oh, I see. So this is like,
maybe download it.
So this is kind of like, people are supporting this open source. Well, it's not open source, but this project that anyone that actually wants to see this thing, you know, come to light, they back it. And then when it gets released for free for everybody.
Yeah, it'll be in the App Store and kind of the whole nine yards. But you'll be able to say, I was at the round level. I was a part of something really big. And I really believe that now that beyond scratching my own itch, I've seen so many people say, hey, that's my itch too. And thank you for building. I had an email even this morning from an angel investor down in Florida emailed me privately through LinkedIn and said, I had just come up with this concept and I was going to kickstart it too. I searched through Kickstarter. I found yours. And then he sent me some money. He was like, go for it. This is what I think the future is. It's just much more independence from the large conglomerates to publish, you know, in terms of the independent web. And to be able to say, hey, I was a part of that is, I think, a big deal. I think we're all looking to be a part of something much bigger than ourselves. And I think Kickstarter and crowdfunding is one way to satisfy that kind of human or, you know, anthropological need. It's just not enough to be part of my own world. I want to be part of something even bigger.
Yeah.
So one thing that I'm curious about with Pressgram is, like, you talked earlier about how you have, you know, kind of all these targets set for your side projects and things. So I'm wondering, have you set sort of, I mean, obviously there's financial milestones with the Kickstarter, but have you set any other kind of goals and targets with this, or are you treating this more as like an experiment that you just want to see what happens with it? You'd like to see it succeed.
Yeah, it is very much an experiment, but every experiment should also have a start and end date. You know, we learned this in elementary school. You know, it's like you experiment for 30 days on, you know, the leaf to see if it dies when you put, you know, oil over it, you know, for whatever that thing. What's that process?
Right.
I'm total OCD. What's that process when air touches a leaf and oxidizes? Come on, like all three of us, we're a bunch of idiots. Like, what is that?
My wife is a science teacher. She'd be shaking her head if she actually listened to this podcast.
Like, you know what I'm talking about though, right? What is that called?
I'm going to throw out either photosynthesis or
photosynthesis.
Cellular respiration.
Yes, photosynthesis. Anyway,
okay.
So it's, you know, and then you have your control group. I'm way off topic, but yes, this experiment has some deadlines, and obviously the Kickstarter project helps accelerate some of those financial goals. But by the end of the calendar year, my big one is just 1,000 users. If I can't get, because it'll be released sometime in August. And so in 3 months, if I can't get 10 users a day from August till, you know, December 31st, 2013, I will either remove it or I will just ask someone else to take over the project or something, because it won't have that enough momentum for me to continue to not only finance the darn thing, because the server costs from AWS are not going to be, you know, it's going to be relatively cheap, but not, you know, since there's no financial model, and immediately it's just going to be out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then, so yeah, December 31st is kind of a big day for me. If I look in my, you know, my logs and there's not 1,000 users, I'm just going to give it away or something.
Huh. Man. And do you think this, like, crowdfunding, is this a good channel for product people to experiment? Like, is this something, based on your experience so far, that you would recommend to other people?
You know what? I have thought about that a lot over the last 2 weeks. And my opinion has changed, like, almost, you know, every other day. And I've read a number of very, very different perspectives. And I cannot remember the gentleman's name, because I would love to give him credit. And maybe I can send you it via the show notes.
Yeah, send us the link later.
But he proposed that Kickstarter and other crowdfunding like Indiegogo and stuff like that are great ways to vet the quality of the idea. And in fact, what might be seen as public shame, because, you know, it sucked not to get funded,
yeah,
is actually saves you countless of hours of not just product development, but also, you know, financial modeling and just trying to create a business.
Yeah.
Because if the culture and the population doesn't fund it, generally speaking, not all the time, but generally speaking, the consumers don't want it. And I think that's a brilliant way for you to just have a slap in the face reality that, hey, this product is a stupid idea. Either the product in its current state or even the concept, you know, at large. And if you're willing to put yourself out there and use crowdfunding as a way to vet an idea, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Some are obviously, like, oh my, I was looking in Atlanta, you know, kind of the Atlanta, I love how they do kind of geographical regions, and there's a zombie board game, okay, right here out of here in Atlanta, and they were trying to raise 25,000, I think it's like two guys or something, I can't remember, two guys created a zombie board game, and the zombie board game is really freaking complex. It's like, it's not for idiots. And even me, it's like, I look at it, and I love D&D, you know, I know how to speak 20-sided dice. And like, and I was looking at it, and I was like, holy crap, I don't know if I would actually enjoy this. It's too complex. And it's like, you know, Settlers of Catan, like, times 10,000. So
Yeah.
But, they, you know, so they were trying to raise 25,000, and now they're at 1.4 million. And, you know, so they're functional millionaires.
Yeah.
You know, in the last 30 days, and I think they have like 3 or 4 more days left. And so the consumers have said, hell yeah, we will buy that.
Yeah.
Fantastic for them. I mean, they'll launch the product easily with the money they've made, and then they can relax for the next 2 years, like, or, you know, I don't know what they're going to be doing. But
yeah,
fantastic. The consumers said yes. And there's other projects, which, you know, I've seen that I think are brilliant ideas, but maybe are being introduced too early to the market.
Yeah.
Like, fantastic hardware solutions that people are like, I just don't get it.
And yeah.
You, all three of us here, we're somewhat technologists, so we get it. We're like, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. But if the consumer space can't support it, it's not a great idea.
Yeah. What is that?
That may be my farm.
Are you okay? Do you need to go check something out?
Evacuate.
Someone's at the door. 1 second.
Oh yeah, he did. He muted himself.
Yeah, I think he muted himself.
Their office looks really cool.
I know. I was like looking at that one video on Kickstarter where he's just kind of in their big office space. So, yeah, brick walls, exposed ceiling, kind of the.
Hey, John.
Hey guys.
Hey.
I'm so sorry.
That's fine. Did you have
under control?
did you have to evacuate?
No, I chose not to.
Yeah.
But I wish they would tell us when they're doing global wide testing. Jeez, that was so loud.
That, like, what was it? It was a fire alarm.
Yes. As far as I can tell, it was a test.
Oh.
But if I do have to run out because the building is burning down, then that'll make for an interesting podcast.
That will make this the most interesting show ever. Yeah, for sure.
I'm sorry that you have to do some editing now, but
yeah, no, that's no problem. I think what we'll do is we'll probably just spend another. Kyle might have to take off here.
Cool.
But we'll spend another 10-15 minutes.
And while you were gone, and we were talking about you, one of the things that kind of came up was, like, you have a very systematic approach to the way that you tackle these side projects. Like, you talked about, I think it was when you were building the first goes at PressGram, you talked about how you estimated the hours, and you built it all in, like, sprints and things like that, which is, again, maybe it's just, like, kind of your nature, but I don't think that's how a lot of people approach their side projects. They kind of just, like Justin said earlier, slog away at it on their spare time. Yeah. So
it's a great question. I know where you're headed. And if there's a way, you know, to export some of that to the listeners, and to be very clear, it's not as systematic or even as clean as, you know, as it may be portrayed. My, the process literally looks like this. I wherever I am, I come with an idea, and as quickly as I possibly can, I write it down in a notebook. For some strange reason, capturing it on something like Evernote or some digital device just doesn't work. And I'll have my action method notebook, and I will capture it in raw form. And I'll just vomit as much as I possibly can about that idea. And then, because, you know, 10 out of 10 times it is a software solution or some software application, I will quickly start laying code as quickly as I possibly can, because I want to not only capitalize on the momentum that's been organically created, but I want to begin to bump up against significant questions about the product as quickly as I possibly can. And then I will work backwards and begin scoping out the much larger project, because at that point I have a realistic depiction of the challenge before me, and then I can actually create very good boundaries and expectations for not only myself, but my partners and my wife, for what this quote-unquote side project might actually become. And it's fairly organic, but I try to hit those major points. Capitalize on organic momentum as quickly as you possibly can. Get into the weeds so that you can actually see what's in the weeds as quickly as possibly can. And then work backwards a little bit, you know, shortly thereafter to say, okay, I've actually started concepting, maybe even building, who knows. And now I have a realistic idea. Okay, so what exactly am I trying to build? Oh, this. Okay, so, man, it really looks like it's going to take this much for Facebook integration, this much for OAuth, and we use this X framework, and holy crap. So, then you can actually see, instead of just some wild guess in terms of a product roadmap, you actually have a really good feel. And people who have done it for a while, you know, they have a very good intuition about them. But if you look at my estimates, in 1,100 to 1,400 hours, that's a difference of 300 hours, and that's a fairly large span. If you actually break that down, that's 7.5 weeks, like, of hardcore work, and that's like two and a half months, it's almost 2 months of work. So it's like, there's still a big window there.
Yeah, but that's,
man,
true.
It's just enough for me to be able to tell my partners, hey, yeah, so this is what I'm doing here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you brought up, how do you talk to your spouse about your side projects, and how do you set kind of realistic expectations?
The best piece of advice I can probably give, which is almost not a piece of advice at all, because, you know, no, it's not a piece of advice, but the greatest thing that I've had for me is my spouse, because there's just no bullshitting your spouse. You know, she's been there, she's seen all of my projects, and it doesn't even matter what language I'm using, how impassioned I am about the idea.
Yeah.
She just can very clearly and objectively look at you straight in the face and be like, man, that's kind of a stupid idea. Or it's typically in line of, well, you've committed yourself to XYZ projects already. I just don't see how logically you can add another.
Yeah.
And a spouse has an uncanny ability to do just that. And
yeah.
I think that's great. I do not pine over, you know, the fact that, you know, I am married. And I know some people are like, you know, I wish I wasn't married so I can work all day and all night. what kind of life is that? So,
yeah,
you know, when I go up to Greenville on Monday to coach this new cohort of this new technology accelerator, you know, one of the things I always provide is, I always ask is, hey, how is your balance of life? How are your activities outside of this startup? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have 12 weeks and you've got a grant of money, and you have to kick serious tail over the next, you know, in this next, you know, 12 weeks or whatever the program length is. But are you having fun? Are you rock climbing? Are you kicking the soccer ball around? Are you hanging out with your friends? Are you being healthy with yourself? And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great perspective. Just the, how we can set realistic expectations for ourselves is one thing. And then also just the people in our lives. That's super important. One thing that we've mentioned is that a lot of product people are doing it by themselves. So they'll get an idea and then they'll just start, you know, every night they'll start putting some time into it. And you've talked about how great it's been to have a team, to have these people at 8-Bit that you really like working with. What if someone was thinking about, you know, maybe finding a partner or building a team? How does that happen?
Yeah, it happens just like, you know, just like anything else. You know, there's no magic in terms of finding a partner, but it just requires you as kind of the founder or the first person to the table to get to a place where you can admit that you're going to do better work and you're going to go further faster with help.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the biggest hurdle. Then everything else is kind of natural. You're going to networking events, or you're going to go to pitch events, or you know, wherever else you network, and you're going to find the right people, or you're going to find someone online and kind of network there. But the first major hurdle was just being honest with yourself and saying, you know what, man, this is going to be much better if I find some help. And the thing that I've said countless times to newer entrepreneurs, and something I wish I learned years ago. It took a long time for me to kind of get over my own ego. But with partners, this is the simple fact, and the only way to know this is experiencing it for yourself, is these three things. When you have partners, you will have more fun, you will make more money, and you will have more margin than without. And this is very important. You will make more money. That's typically the first issue is like, oh, if I partner, I have to give away. Don't
exactly.
Worry. You'll make more money.
Well, that's a huge, I think that's what people think. Like they think I've got this great idea and you start kind of thinking about it. And then you think, well, if I have to share this with somebody else, that's going to cut it in half. And then if we bring someone else in, it's going to cut it, you know, again and then again and again. So how did you overcome that? And maybe just give us a picture of how it ended up being more successful for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's because unless you're like the magical unicorn where you can apparently do all things like mm-hmm. all at the same time, generally you're going to be a specialist. You're going to be primarily a developer or primarily a designer. Or primarily a business and operations person, or primarily a sales, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And a startup is so it's so important for a startup to have specialists that are kicking serious butt at being amazing and excellent in particular areas than a bunch of generalists doing everything mediocre. Because mm-hmm. no investment company, especially angel or venture capital. None of those investors are going to want to invest in mediocre people. They're going to want to invest in specialists, people who are at the top of their game, who are very clear about the things that they're exceptional at, and also very clear about the things that they suck at. Me, you know, historically, I'm a developer.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm honest, and I'm very open about this, I'm not that great of a developer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. What I'm really good at is vision casting and coaching and leading teams.
Yeah.
Even though I have a great history, a very great history in product development and actual software architecture.
Yeah.
Man, my partner, Tom, is one of the best software programmers I have ever met. And he makes me look really stupid. And thank God for that, because
yeah.
he architects our core products and makes sure that we're on time. And then Jared, my other partner, he's obviously a designer. He can do front-end development better than most people.
Yeah.
But he's a designer, and that's what we ask him to do. And guess what happens when he specializes? Guess what happens when Tom specializes? Guess what happens when I specialize? We have more fun doing the things that we were uniquely made to do, and there's less burnout.
Because, yeah.
You know, every startup experiences burnout. And so I say when you guys have specialists within your organization, man, you're going to go further faster, which means you're going to grow faster. You're going to make more money faster. And if you had to give up a couple of percents for it, trust me, it's much better to have, 100% or, half of something than 100% of nothing. And, even when you get even larger scale.
Yeah.
When you get into the millions of dollars in terms of valuation, like at that point, it's all the same.
Yeah. Well, and maybe – so if you are just building a side project, how would, and you're, you know, maybe you're just feeling like, maybe there's someone out there listening right now and they've said, you know, I've been building this for 2 years and I still haven't released anything. And, you know, I'm finally able to realize that I need some help. What should they do as someone that has, you know, maybe not a lot of capital and maybe, you know, what could they offer? How would they go and find somebody and convince them to partner up?
Yeah, I would look that person, you know, that mythical person that you just shared, I would look straight in the face and say, the biggest enemy to your continued advancement for this product is yourself. You haven't launched because there is something within this context. There's an incredible amount of inertia that you can't overcome without help. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to first. You have to say, I admit it. I'm not going to be able to launch this product. What you then do is then you squarely set an expectation for how much you're willing to give away. What does it mean for me? What does it mean for me to give away half of the company to make sure that my vision is secured and my vision is actually implemented? Mm-hmm. And how far will I go? If I'm so in love with the idea of customers touching and feeling and using my product and sitting on the subway and seeing someone across from me boot up their iPhone and use my application, mm-hmm. how satisfying that would be to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth 10% of the company? Is it worth 90% of the company to give away? And I think that it requires a level of introspection. For me, you know, that scenario of being able to see some of our customers who walk in our doors, who come to some of our meetups and say, John, Tom, Jared, Chris, I've been using your product for years.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that they can say that, I gave away the vast majority of my company for that.
Yeah.
And that I'm so, and guess what? We're still doing great financially. I still get to pay my mortgage and my kids get, you know, everything they need.
Yeah.
And so, that's what I say is just, you have to have an internal conversation. How much are you willing to give away to make sure, to ensure that that product, that business sees the light of day? And I can take some time to kind of ruminate about.
Yeah. You know, there's so much more we could talk about, but I think we'll end with this. And that is, you touched on this a little bit, but how do you find good people? How do you find good partners? You've found some people that you'd say are your best friends. How do you find good people and partner with them?
Yeah, finding good people is an art and a science, kind of both in the same nut. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in experimenting with people, just as you would experiment with an idea.
Mm-hmm.
All of the guys that I now are my best friends and my general partners, I've experimented with them, and there's nothing wrong with that. I contracted and worked with Jared, our designer, on a couple of side projects for some clients and just got a feel for who he is, what his character is like, how he meets deadlines, and if he was someone that I could trust. Chris, you know, we actually met on kind of the blog comment layer. He started trolling my blog years ago. And he commented and it disagreed with me, and I was like, man, I'm going to spam this guy. But I was able to eventually meet up with him and kind of test the quality and character of who he was. And just starting me, our first official meeting was at Taco Bell. I mean, super cheap date. And I forgot my wallet. He'll never let me forget that. I forgot my wallet, so he had to end up paying for my tacos at Taco Bell. And so we just continue the meeting. So I get a feel for how the way he develops products, his software development skills, and also his heart.
Yeah.
You know? And eventually we became such great friends that, you know, I moved my entire family into his basement for a year and some change. And then Tom, same thing, you know. I think you build relationships just as you would friends. You know, mm-hmm. see who they are, see what they're about, and see not only do they have the functional skills, but do they like you? You know,
mm-hmm.
do I like them? And could I sustain a relationship, a serious, because, you know, startup relationships are serious stuff. Like, you're literally married to these people.
Yeah.
To see if it works out.
Yeah. Hey, John, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you? Where are a few of the places people can find you online?
Well, I try to simplify things. So the best way to find out the stuff that I'm actively working on is just my landing page, and that's just my name, John, J-O-H-N, dot D-O, John dot Doe. And you can just go there, and there are just links to some of the projects I'm involved with right now.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for being on the show. We'll have to have you come back on again in the future.
Justin, thank you so much. And then, of course, Kyle, thank you so much for your time as well. This has been really cool. And to be honest, there are some things I shared on this kind of podcast that I've really never talked about. So this is kind of a unique podcast.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to talking to you again.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
Okay. Goodbye. Hey, now it's time for our shout-out section. This is a chance for you to advertise your project to our audience of product people, entrepreneurs, developers, and designers. The first shout-out comes from Jesse Stormer, who's promoting this post he's written. Go to bit.ly/ebook18k. This is really interesting. Jesse says, "Learn how I launched my first ebook with no audience and no promotion, then sold $18,000 worth in the first 4 months. I checked it out. It's really interesting. Go to bit.ly/ebook18k. Leave a comment and let them know you found him through Product People. Second, I'd like to promote our Product People newsletter. You can sign up and get product making resources sent directly to your inbox. This week, we're sending out the private conversation Kyle and I had while John Saddington was dealing with that fire alarm. Go to productpeople.tv/newsletter. Next up, hover.com/productpeople. Register a domain with hover.com and use the promo code productpeople, all one word, to get 10% off your order. And finally, Ting for our USA listeners. If you go to productpeople.ting.com, that's T-I-N-G. Ting is a mobile service that gives you great rates, no overage penalties, and multiple devices on one plan. If you go to productpeople.ting.com, you'll get $25 off most Ting devices or $25 toward Ting service. If you want to be featured in the shout-out section, the cost starts at $39 per episode, and it's a great way to reach thousands of people. To purchase a shout-out, go to productpeople.tv/shout-out. Thanks for sticking with us through this long episode. We'll see you next week.